I am Chris Cloud. We're here to talk about shepherding young souls with love and logic. I think what we need to get out on the table first, my friend Mike Hahn helped me with this, what tonight won't be. So what tonight won't be is a, I'm sorry. So this is our overview, right? What tonight won't be, introductions, what parenting is and what it's not. Is there a goal in parenting and what is it? Guiding principles for parenting, and then thoughts on how to know each child and practical thoughts, spiritual, situational parenting. So the first couple bullets we'll go through pretty fast. What tonight won't be is a complete overview of parenting with love and logic. I have looked at an overview of the book. I did not know that this speaker was coming last week when I picked the title of this presentation. So if you're looking for a full understanding of this book, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. But what I can do is share insights on how God has helped me understand how to love my kids, support other parents in loving their kids, and how to use logic, thought progression to help our kids make choices and own their responsibilities, which I think is a lot of what this book is about. So, sorry, I didn't intend to trick anybody to being out here tonight, but thanks for being here. Yes, shepherding young souls with love and logic. So, introductions, right? Who am I? Why am I up here? Who are the Cloud kids? And who are all of you, right? Who am I? I am a father of three. I am a lay Bible teacher. I teach in a weekly Bible study here associated with this church, Xenos Christian Fellowship. And I just want to acknowledge up front that I'm a man very different than who I thought I would be for my trajectory. One of the things that held me back from getting married earlier is I realized that I had no idea how to be a godly husband, how to be a good husband, or how to be a good father. And so God has changed me radically in that way. Praise be to Him for that. So I don't come to you as an expert. I come to you as a fellow practitioner and learner. Why am I up here? Because I'm really humbled and passionate about being a parent. Humbled because I know it's a responsibility and stewardship I don't deserve. Passionate because it's such a privilege, it's such an opportunity to lead and guide and mold the next generation for God. It's such a source of fun and enjoyment. It's hard. It's very, very hard. But it is incredibly rewarding. I've learned a lot from God, from others, from failures for certain. And I'll share some of those with you tonight. And I also am up here to encourage you to keep pressing on to parent your kids. You're here because you care, right? And you care about your kids. You care about your future kids. You care about other people's kids. And that's important. God's into that. Philippians 3, 13 through 15 says, "Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead. I press on towards the goal for the prize of the upward calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many are as perfect, have this attitude. And in anything you have a different attitude, God will reveal this also to you." Who are the Cloud kids? Maybe it doesn't matter much, but let's talk about it for a minute. This is our family. This is me. This is my wife, Jenny. She's sitting over there. She loves to be recognized in a crowd. So could you please put your hand up, honey? Thank you so much. And these are our three kids. The oldest one in the front here with the yellow tie on, that's Colin. He's about 6 and a half now. Camden in the plaid shirt, he's about 4 and a half. And Colson, the little guy on Jenny's hip, he's about 2 and a half now. And this photo was taken just a couple months ago. These are the guys again. They're fun. They're so fun. But who are they really, right? Well, let's start with the oldest first. Colin, he is a pretty cognitive guy. He likes to have fun. He is an acts of service kind of guy. He's really wants to understand why and how things work. He's timid, fearful sometimes, but we talk through all that stuff. Here he is. He's the one in the front, or actually he's the one in the back, and he likes to send his middle brother, Camden, out in front because he's fearful. And so we talk about that. We don't push too hard, but he always sends Camden in to go into the dark room first. But here he is with two dinosaur tails because I guess he stole one from Coulson. So here's Camden. He's our crazy, kind of outgoing, jovial fellow. This is him being excited about life. It's great. And he's kind of a clown. This is him trick-or-treating, being Mario. Luigi. Colin was Mario in this one. And Camden, Coulson was Toad. Here's Coulson. He's distracted by all shiny objects. Easy to redirect now, but we'll see what it's like when he's a couple years older. And he loves food, and he loves to wear food. So that's Coulson. So I just wanted to know, who are all of you? And what I mean by that is, who has kids that are under two? Just show of hands. All right, about a quarter of the room. What about 2 to 4? All right, wow, about half the room. Okay, what about 5 to 8? Okay, good. 8 to 12? All right, about a quarter. What about teens? Who's got teens? Okay. Why are you guys all sitting in the back? What does that mean about teens? What do I have in store for me, right? Okay, good. Well, we're going to be covering principles that I believe cover all ages, but obviously I don't have anyone older than 7, so I don't know how tried and true it is, but I believe it covers. So I look forward to hearing your input afterwards and telling me what I need to know for the future. What parenting is and what parenting isn't. I feel like this is really important, and nothing that I'm sharing with you tonight are things that I don't share with my 4 and 6-year-old. So what I mean by that is, I talk to my kids about God. I talk to them about spiritual warfare. I talk to them about my priorities in parenting and in life. I explain to them why I am around and why I'm not around at times, what I'm doing with my time. They need to know that. 2-year-old, he's just chasing shiny objects. But the 4-year-old just kind of listens a little bit, but the 6-year-old's really dialed in. That might be a little bit of his personality and temperament, but I feel like educating our kids on why we do what we do is important. So let's first talk about what parenting is not. It's not the primary purpose of our lives. That's very countercultural. Our culture is going to say that our kids should be our world, should be our whole focus. I don't see that in the Bible at all. And I let my kids know that. Just from a cultural perspective, this is an article from 2014, How American Parenting is Killing the American Marriage, by Daniel Teller, who's a physician and researcher, and Astro Teller. He's the head of Google X, which is really fascinating. It's kind of the research and sort of innovative portion of Google. And he's done projects like Google Glass, Google Driverless Car, Google Contact Lens, which is something you wear and try to check your diabetes, and Project Loon, which is an idea that Google thought was so stupid they called it loony, and it's providing internet to everyone through balloons that float in the sub-atmosphere. So the only point I'm bringing up is two really intelligent folks, secular folks. I don't believe in everything that they've written, but they do have some good points in this area. And just to share with you briefly, to understand the power of the parenthood religion, as they call it, one needs look no further than the 25 essay that the New York Times, in the New York Times, by Aliette Waldman, where the author explained that she loved her husband more than her 4 children. On Oprah, Where Are They Now?, the author recently reaffirmed the sentiment and reflected in the New York Times that she reflected in the New York Times article, and she added that her outlook has had a positive impact on her children by giving them a sense of security in their parents' relationship. Following the publication of her essay, Waldman was not only shouted down by Americans for being a bad mother, strangers threatened her physically and told her that they would report her to Children's Protective Services. This is their view. This is not how a civil society conducts open-minded discourse. So our culture tells us that our kids should be our world, that we should provide anything and everything for them. And God agrees in a sense that they should be a key priority, but not number one. So I don't know what your personal position is on that, but let me share with you God's position. Exodus 23, you shall have no other gods before me. This means God needs to be number one. If our kids are number one, where's God? Mark 12:30, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. My communication to our kids, and I communicate it openly, is God's number one in my life, my spouse is number two, and you guys come real close right after that. Because where do I get the insight, where do I get the perspective to love my kids? Not from me, not from these articles, not from, you know, worldly wisdom. It has to be from God. It has to be from the person who created human life, right? What do I know? What do we know about how to prepare young souls for their future lives, really? And then secondly, if we realize that marriage is a team and we have to build our spouse up, God makes it really clear that our primary ministry is to love our spouses. We got to take care of that first. We got to take care of our household. And that leadership that God puts in place of the parents has to be united. They have to invest in each other. They have to have quality time. I recommend weekly time, investing in each other, knowing each other. Because if you don't have that, how are you going to help your kids, right? It's not what our culture tells us. What else is it not? It can't be something to fit in around our lives, our jobs, our busy schedules, right? Our jobs are take us away from the home a lot, depending on your life situation. We're more busy than any other society in existence. Parenting takes time. Parenting requires that we are ready when the moment comes, that we are to be teachers when the questions come about, when the failure comes about, when the frustration comes about. And so if we're overly busied and we're not prepared for that in advance, we're just going to start managing our kids to not disrupt our schedule. And that's not what parenting is. We know parenting is a priority, but we're also busy. But we have to ask ourselves, why are we busy and with what, right? If we're busy with the right things, tell the kids, right? I teach Bible study. I meet with men a couple times a week to try and help them understand who God is. And I tell the kids, hey, Daddy's got to go out tonight, and this is what I'm doing, right? If we're away because we're, or if we don't have time with them because we're, you know, getting involved in chain-smoking episodes of on Netflix or something like that, or we're so allocated towards debt that we need to spend so much time at work, that's a lot harder to explain to the kids. But we can explain our failures too, right? God's into us being open about that. Beware of the doom loop, right? This is the idea that we all feel like we don't have enough time. We don't know how to fix it. So we don't take time to figure out how to fix it. Why? Because we don't have time. Well, now you're just stuck, right? So is the God of the universe, who created space and time, able to help you figure out how to manage your time, able to help you figure out priorities? If we can take that position of humility under God's leadership and be open and honest with friends, I guarantee you he'll give you insight. He'll give you perspective on it. It's not a way to live out our dreams either. We've got to be careful of this. God's enemy wants us to think this is true. God's enemy wants us to take the opportunity to fulfill some of our desires as children that we didn't get fulfilled, or maybe help them be the adults that we wish we were, right? We need to be content with what we are and how God's made us and not try to live our lives through our kids. There was a real frightening documentary. I watched it on Netflix recently. I think it's still available, called Trophy Kids. And here's just the summary of it. This harrowing documentary profiles parents who lose sight of what's important as they relentlessly push their kids to excel at sports. It documents, I think, four different parents. And I got to be honest, some of the heart attitudes that they manifested can come into my heart, right? And so seeing this kind of content, challenging ourselves with the way that our hearts can go, is really helpful. Great content to get into for a date night with your spouse. Really sharpening. So before I move on to what parenting is, I just want to ask you guys, I know, can't all respond, but I'm just curious, of what I've mentioned about what parenting isn't, what resonates with you? What's challenging? To take care of your body and to be healthy for the long haul, for your family, for your kids, makes sense. You know, if we're spending 3 hours at the gym every day of the week, you know, that might be something we need to figure out. Yeah, it's easy to feel guilty, and our culture is going to judge us for different reasons. We're going to judge ourselves. You know what's awesome is when they misbehave in front of the public and make you feel terrible, right? That's my favorite, right? But so what do you do with that, right? How do you work that out? How do you talk to them? How do you shepherd them along? How do you not respond just because you're embarrassed in the situation in the moment? You know, sometimes I'll tell, like, my kids understand now when we go to a store, most of the time we go to the store, it's because we're going to window shop. They get that. But that took a while. That took a long time, right? And a lot of people thought that was sort of a crazy idea. Who goes to a store not to buy something? Well, you could do that. It's not against the law. Cool. All right. So what is parenting? It is a stewardship from God. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a leadership privilege, right? So God describes himself as the perfect father. He's our father. He also makes it clear that he's the father of our children, the perfect father of our children. We don't have to be perfect parents because he's perfect. We can lean into him. But he has given us a special leadership role in their lives. Absolutely. And we're called by God to play that role. We don't want to let school play that role. We don't want to let their friends play that role. We don't want to let their friends' parents play that role. We need to play that role. Trust God to play that role. And be real gentle and forgiving with ourselves, just as he's forgiving with us. It's something we're all ill-equipped to do. I mean, or at least I can say it's something I'm ill-equipped to do. I don't know all of the inner workings of my kids. I don't understand all their ins and outs. Especially when they shut down, I don't know what's going on, right? But God can give us insight. He understands. He's sovereign. And, you know, there's good news for us who realize we're ill-equipped, right? Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." This is just the idea that we're not perfect. I talked to my son about not being perfect. I remember when we were reading the Exodus, and the Israelites were going through the ocean, and you know, it's like the waves are starting to crash down. Colin's wondering, like, you know, where are the Egyptians? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? And he asked me, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? And I said, well, actually, from God's perspective, they're all bad guys. It's just that Israel are the people that he chose to make his nation, right? Just like Daddy's actually a bad guy, but it's the fact that Jesus died for my sins that means I can trust him and move forward. And that arrested his attention. I just remember him sitting in my lap, and he turns up at me, and Camden looks at me too, and he goes, Daddy's a bad guy? You know? It's like, yeah, in a certain perspective, and so are you, right? So that's what Romans 3:23 is saying. For the wages of sin is death, and the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. This is just the idea that God doesn't give us what we deserve. What we deserve is death, spiritual death. But instead of spiritual death, God gives us spiritual life. And then John 3:3, in reply, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, no one can see the kingdom of God unless he is born again." This is what I teach my kids. I teach them that Jesus is the way to know God. Jesus is the way to have spiritual life. And so we talk about that. And we need to know that as parents. We need to grow in our understanding of that, because when we fail, what are we going to lean on? Then you have John 14:6. Jesus answered him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And then you have Romans 10:9-11. "That if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you confess and are saved. As the scripture says, anyone who trusts in him will never be put to shame." So this is the idea that we need to respond to God's offer. We need to respond to his offer of forgiveness through Jesus' death and resurrection. It applies to all people, but we have to want it. We have to say, I want to receive that. And then you have 2 Corinthians 5:15, "And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again." So this is the idea that our life is not our own now. If we choose to accept God's forgiveness, that we should respond to his love. We're not working for God's love. We're responding to his love. And that's what I'm trying to help my kids understand. Don't work. That's what Colin wants to do. He's a relational guy. He's an act of service guy. He wants to work for my love. And I bet a lot of your kids want to do that too. We need to be real careful about that, because oftentimes what they'll do is they'll work for performance. They'll work to please us. They'll work to, right? We have to encourage effort. We have to encourage trying. We have to encourage trusting, not performance and results. Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me. So this is the idea that God wants a vibrant relationship with us. It's not just a transaction and then he's far off and distant. No, he wants to know us. He wants to eat with us. He wants to know us like friends. And that's the same relationship that we want our kids to have with God and that we want to have with our kids. But it can't be our primary goal. We can't make our primary goal that we want our kids to be our best friend. That wouldn't go well. So it's on that basis that God has forgiven us that we can actually parent under grace. Because like that insightful comment in the back, right? It's so easy to judge ourselves. It's so easy to be upset about wanting something for ourselves, right? Like that we have to give our kids everything and there's no time left for ourselves. We need to be careful of that. Or be upset at ourselves and judge and condemn ourselves when we make mistakes, right? Who's made a mistake as a parent? Show of hands. I'll put two hands up, right? So how are we going to go to the Lord and acknowledge that that's just part of life, making mistakes? What are we teaching our kids if we feel like we need to be perfect parents, that our kids need to be perfect kids? Isn't part of modeling showing them our failures? I've shown them some of my failures. I'll just share one example of a failure. When I was disciplining Colin, he was escalating and escalating and escalating. It wasn't extreme what he was doing, but it was just that nagging cycle, you know, where they just like, why, no, 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 why. So he wasn't hurting anybody. So I'm not going to tell him, if you keep doing this, you're going to get a spank or something like that. It wasn't worthy of that. But it was rebellion, and it was really frustrating, right? So what do you do? And I made a really foolish decision. He was already in timeout, and I said, listen, if you don't stop, then you're going to miss out on, we had an activity planned later that day. And it was supposed to be one-on-one time with he and I, Daddy Colin time. So he went another two or three times. I felt like I was gracious and forbearing, and I said, all right, you miss out. And I walked away, and he lost it. He lost it. So what do? Well, you take a minute, you press pause in your own mind, you consider, you turn to the Lord, you pray about it. What did I just communicate to him? I communicated that our relationship and our special time, which I emphasize to him as his special time, is conditional upon his performance. Is that the way God is with me? Heck no. No way. No way. Right? It impacted me because I see him crying. I didn't feel good about that. For a second, I was like, see, I got through to him. Like, no. No, I communicated the wrong thing. So what do? I get down, I talk to him about it, and I say, hey, bud, Daddy made a terrible judgment there. I'm not going to do that. You're not going to miss out on that time. But you do need to listen, and I will keep escalating in these ways of discipline. But there's nothing you can do to prevent us from having our one-on-one time. And I go back to him with that. I don't just tell him one time. I remind him, hey, Colin, do you remember a couple months ago when Daddy made that real bad decision about, I was going to not go and do our one-on-one time? He's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah, that was really bad. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was really bad, right? Because these lessons that we have, these things that we teach our kids, like, we have to reinforce it. We have to ingrain it in their minds, help them realize that it's not just something that Dad thought was important in that moment. It's something foundational. It's principle-based parenting. Guiding principles for parenting, from my perspective, real clear from the Bible, God's number one. Ministering to your spouse is the next priority. And then from those two strong positions, love your kids in a radical way, right? That doesn't mean giving them what they want. It means encouraging them to understand and know God and to respond to God's love, really. But you have to have firm footing with God and with your spouse. How are you going to do it otherwise? What about this? We got to know our goal in parenting. What's our goal? What are we trying to achieve? When's the job done? probably never done, right? But what's the goal? I think that a lot of times we can get trapped into thinking that the goal is having kids who behave well, right? Having kids who listen, having kids who don't disrespect me, having kids who perform in sports, having kids who perform in school. But see, now our kids are just objects, right? Where's the relationship? So I don't know if you've thought about your goal in parenting. If you haven't, I'd encourage you to do so. Hey, nobody look around. But I'm just curious, who feels like they've actually thought through their goal in parenting and talked to their spouse about it? Okay, a couple hands. Maybe a fifth of the room. If you don't really take anything away from this other than the fact that God wants you to be under His grace and in His love, this will be the second takeaway point. Pray through, ask for insight on what's your goal in parenting, right? Talk to your spouse about it. My goal, our goal, is to raise our kids up in God's truth and to help them be secure in His truth and doers of His word, right? That's our goal. Simple as that. And I tell them that. That's what we want for you. That's not a secret. Why would that be a secret? That'd be weird. All right. Thoughts on how to know each child. So every kid's different. How do you know your kid? I heard a groan. All right. So I really like the five love languages. This first book on the left. Yeah, the purple one. Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman, and then also the Five Love Languages for Children. This was really helpful for me early on to understand, the purple book, that was something that Jenny and I studied in date night. It's concepts I'd heard before. If you've been maybe around people in this church, you've probably heard them before. But read them for yourself. Meditate on them. Pray on them. Read the scriptures associated with them. I can't go through all of it. And then the Five Love Languages for Children. It's fascinating. So what are they, right? The first one, physical touch. So what Chapman's concept is here is that people receive love in different ways. And if we're called to love one another as Christ loved us, if we're called to do to one another as we would have them do unto us, we're to be love initiators, right? If you're going to be a love initiator, you have to understand how someone else works to love them in a way that they receive love, you know? If you're the kind of person that's like, don't touch me, and I'm always putting my arm around my buddy and hanging out and this, that, and the other, he's like, dude, what's going on, right? Same thing with your spouse, right? If you're the kind of person that likes to, I guess I'm talking through some of these, but if you're the kind of person that likes to give and receive gifts, but someone else feels awkward and obligated when you give them a gift, maybe you got to figure out a way to communicate your love to them in a different way, right? So it's not what's your love language, what's theirs. So physical touch, right? So for our kids, this would be rough play. It could be sitting on our legs. It could be, I love to throw pillows at my kids. It's fun. They love that. That's kind of, you know, physical touch. And Camden's all about physical touch. He's a pretty affectionate kid, which is cool. Words of affirmation. This is great effort on that, buddy. I really liked how you kept trying. I'm careful about good job in terms of what you accomplished, you know. Good shot, good job. It's more, I love the way you kept trying. That's awesome. You know, I'm really proud of the way you trusted God there. You know, those kinds of things. What's in His control, right? What's in our kids' control? Encourage that. Words of affirmation around that. Results aren't in their control, right? But effort is. Trust is. Trusting God is. Quality time spent. This is spending time with our kids. This is something we all need to do. I'll take all three of my kids and I'll go somewhere. And you'd be surprised the looks from parents that I get. They're like, what is this crazy man doing? Like, why does he have three kids with him? Like, who has that many kids and why is the dad doing it and where's the mom and he must be exhausted? And I'm having fun, right? It's like, no, it doesn't have to be bad, right? So spend time with your kids as a group. If you've got a couple, try to make sure you get one-on-one time with them too. You know, if you have a kid or if you only have one or two kids, weekly time is ideal. If you got more than that, you might need to combine them together and then kind of do a one-on-one and maybe an every other week kind of way. But pray through that. Think through that. What kind of a commitment to investing in your kids can you make? Because, you know, here's the thing. If you've got young kids like many of us do in this room, as they get older and older, we get less and less cool. So get in there early and often and establish that as a routine so that when you're not cool, they just don't think about not doing it with you and they're still hanging out with you. Giving and receiving gifts. So this would be, you know, the person that, for kids especially, they like to make stuff for you, like to give it to you. So what do you see your kid doing? That's probably their love language. And try to love them the same way. Acts of service, this is Colin's love language. His favorite thing to do, when I was trying to figure out what his love language was, I gave him like three options. I was like, do you want to do daddy wrestle time? Do you want to go to a special, you know, go and get like ice cream at a special store? Or do you want to go in the garage and pull nails out of wood? And he's like, I want to go in the garage and pull nails out of wood. It's crazy, right? Why? Because he's serving me, because it's like a daddy job, and he loves to have a hammer, and we're doing stuff together. So it hits on his two love languages, which is quality time spent and acts of service. So sorting through that, thinking through that, praying through that, talking to your spouse, it's fun, right? Our kids are complicated, but if we see this as an opportunity to discover, as God gives us insight, it can be great. And what I'm trying to teach a little bit tonight is principles to try and understand our kids, keep God's perspective, because I've got anecdotes and examples about different things with my kids, but every kid is different. Every situation is different. If that's something that you're realizing is maybe a, like if it's happened a time or two, I'd think maybe praying about it and getting insight. But if you feel like it's a real pattern, you know, having intentional time, you know, if all you can do is start with 20 minutes, right? Do that. Start with something. It might be that because you're having this authentic time, you're getting pushback. You're starting to exercise a little bit more of your leadership role in their lives, and you're getting attacked for that. I'm not sure your situation, but you know, having that authentic time, maybe knowing that you might feel awkward when it happens, and praying in advance and saying, God, before you, even though I'm going to feel awkward, I'm just going to try and be present and receive, and I'll reflect on what it is that you want me to understand about these girls after I get away from the situation. Because it, what can you do to take a step of trust with God in that situation would be how I'd start praying about it. Here's another way that you can think through trying to know your kids. And you might not see this in your kids early on, but this is, there's a lot of different assessments out there, personality kind of assessments. This is just called the DISC assessment. So this is basically plotting people on two different paradigms, right? Are they aggressive or responsive? And are they task-oriented or people-oriented? And depending on which of those two things you lean towards, you find out that maybe you're a driver who likes to get it done. You're an influencer who wants to see the and get the big picture. You're kind of steady Eddie and just wants to get along with other people. Or you're, you know, wanting to really get it right, be perfectionist about it. And so what's helpful is to understand who you are and then also to understand who the other people are that you're interacting with, specifically your spouse and your kids. Because if you are, you know, if you're in the opposite corners, you're going to have some weird times, right? You're going to have some conflict because you actually don't have that much in common. You are on the opposite perspective of task-oriented versus people-oriented, and you're also on the opposite perspective of being aggressive or responsive. So, you know, it doesn't mean that we don't relate to them. It just means that we might have to be more prepared in those interactions. I have to pray much more diligently and consistently for my time with my middle child than for my older child because I understand and know him better. And my middle child is really fun and super rebellious. So I need to be ready for that. I need to be prepared. And I need to figure out how to help him be led through that with gentleness. So just another thought on kind of understanding people. Pray, right? I mean, these are paradigms. I mean, the Chapman stuff is very biblical. But, you know, to know our kids, we got to get insight from God. We need to pray. We need to talk to our spouse. We need to reflect with friends and really try to understand their inner workings. You do not have because you do not ask. I think James has got a good point here. We've got to ask God for insight. We've got to ask God for understanding. Practical thoughts, situational parenting. All right. So this is kind of my musings. engagement should be real high. Almost high control early with increasing freedom to learn while still in the house. What I mean by this is I'm really engaged with my kids right now. They're all under 7. One of the kind of lower, I mean, it's a sub-goal of my parenting is that I want to be one of the most laid-back parents by the time they're 10 to 12. Right now, I'm pretty engaged, not that laid-back. Colin challenges me a lot. He rebels against me and says I'm controlling him, right? That's so fun to hear, right, from a kid, that I'm controlling him. When what I'm asking him to do is I'm trying to give him options and choices. Do you want to clean up your toys, or would you like to have less toys, right? You're controlling me, right? And it's like, well, am I really? He's like, well, it feels like you are. Now we're in a discussion about, okay, well, is it true, or is it feelings? Because we've already talked about the difference between truth and feelings, right? Feelings are something we have, and sometimes they align with truth, but not always are they true. If you get pushback from your kids on controlling or something like that, something that I asked him that really stumped him is I said, you know, that is hard, and I can understand how you feel that way. You know, God's put me here as a leader. Maybe that was a mistake. He's like, no, it wasn't a mistake. And I was like, okay, what does it look like for Daddy to be a leader but not controlling you? He's like, oh, I don't know. Right? Because he just wants to be his own boss. He doesn't know what leadership looks like. So kind of asking him that question, it's calmed him down for at least a half week. We'll see what happens. Be engaged, open, and transparent in most areas. So there might be some areas that you hold back transparency in. I mean, I don't talk to my kids too much about sexuality right now. I do a little bit, but not a ton, given their ages. But I don't hold back on the fact that God has an enemy. I don't hold back that there's not just good people and bad people. There's prideful people and humble people, right? I don't hold back on biblical teaching that I think is appropriate for their age. And I want to be pushing what I think is appropriate because I want to get there first. I don't want their friends getting there first with these different truth claims. I want to be there first with God's truth. And, you know, being open and transparent about your own failures is important, too. Be intentional with each child. We've talked about this already. One-on-one time, right? So some ideas for this, right? I started intentional time with our first one around, like, one and a half. Now it's kind of sliding a little bit more. Now it's more like two once you get a couple kids there. But scheduling, I mean, if you feel like you have no time, start with 10 or 15 minutes. Start with something. Take a step of trust towards God to say, I know you want me to be engaged in my kids' lives. I have no idea how to make the time. And that is part of the problem. We think we need to make the time. But there's only one being that can make time, and that's God himself. So we don't have to make time. We have to take time. And what I mean by that is we need to figure out what priorities we're getting involved in that's stealing time from the priorities that God would want us to be involved in. We have to take time for that. It needs to be a priority. One-on-one time could be over food. Camden loves that, especially donuts. Lots of low-cost options, no-cost options. I do window shopping at the pet store. We'll go and we'll play with the pets. We'll, you know, play with the turtles, the fish, what have you. Check out a toy store just for looking around. And then my dad thought I was crazy. They're like, well, these kids are going to want all this stuff. I'm like, no, actually they won't because I've been doing it with them for half a year. Go to the park. Nature's a great place. We love McDonald's indoor play place. There's one just down the road here that you can do on a rainy day. Home Depot, first Saturday of each month, you can do a craft with your kids. They do that up to, I think they do that up to like 12. It's really fun, messy, a lot of good times. Nature's awesome, showing them God's creation and talking through what God made, how amazing God is, the way that he put things together, the way that he put us together, how complex his insights are. If you're excited about something, they'll be excited too. They'll do it. They absolutely will. I've been excited about the silliest stuff, and it doesn't matter. I mean, it probably matters as they get older, but show energy and show excitement. Have fun. Life's hard, but it's also fun. We've got to communicate that God has good things for us. Think through, pray through their perspective on what would be fun, right? Something that's fun for Camden might not be something that's fun for Colin. Maybe it's different for your kids. Maybe what you think is fun isn't what they think is fun. Give them three or four options that you're all cool with, and I'm sure they'll pick one. They're not going to say no. Get down on the floor, roll around, make a mess, make something together. Options. understanding their love language. Wrestle time, playing with, you know, this is just a bunch of rough stuff with little boys. It's a good time. I really like teasing them with antitheses. It's a fun game, and it teaches them a lot. So sometimes we'll be doing something, and Camden will lob an accusation at me. One recent one was that, Daddy, you don't love me. That was awesome, right? So I come home from work, I'm driving home, and I'm praying on the way home because I know that the battle's going to be there. Jenny's going to be exhausted. Maybe the kids are going off. There's maybe tons of stuff going on. And so I come in, I greet each of my boys. Camden was the last. I leaned in and I was like, hey, buddy, I love you. How are you doing? He's like, Daddy doesn't love Camden. It's like, wow, that's quite an accusation. And so I said, well, I felt that way about my dad before. And, you know, both of our spiritual dads is God. I felt that way about God. And there's a story in the Bible about that. Would you like to look at it later? Right? I didn't want to attack him right then and there. I said, would you look at that with me later? And he just looked at me confused and was like, yeah, sure, I will. So we had dinner, and then we looked at the prodigal son later, and we talked through it. I talked through my experience as a man running away from God, rejecting his love and kindness when I had experienced it, just as this boy was running away from God, just how maybe Camden might think that, you know, and the whole source is the accusation that I'm going to be better off without God. I can choose what's right and wrong for me. So we read through that story in a kid's Bible, and he was really attentive to that. He really paid attention. So now, I can tease him, and I can say, God doesn't love us. If we run away from him, he'll run away from us. And he's like, no, Daddy, that's not true, right? Any truth claim that I've established that he knows is true, I can now joke with him. I can tease with him and kind of reinforce the fact that it is really true. And especially since he's so rebellious, antitheses are the best. They really are. Discipline. All right. You got to do it. It's hard. It's real hard. But you know what happens if we don't discipline our kids? What would happen if God didn't discipline us? We know. We'd be rebellious. We'd never listen. We'd never learn. We need to let them fail. We need to let them fail in a safe environment and fail forward if we can. But we have to get involved in discipline. I am very, very clear about the rules in our house. And I try to keep them principle-based, and I try to keep them really simple. I started teaching Colin the principle-based rules for our house, being under God's leadership, when he was probably 3.5, 4. So ours, we had 3 to start off with. I just added another one because he's getting a little older. Always tell the truth. That's rule number 1. I didn't tell him the reason for these rules initially. I just told him what they were. Why is this rule number 1? Because God is a God of truth. His enemy, the devil, is the father of lies. If you get into not knowing the difference between truth and lie, how are you going to trust God, right? When you lie, you're either trusting yourself or you're trusting God's enemy. You know, that scared him, right? And I'm like, you know what? I can accidentally lie and I can intentionally lie, Colin. I don't want you to be scared. I want you to know that God who's in your heart is greater than God's enemy. But I do want you to know that telling the truth is really important. Number 1 for us. Number 2, be gentle with your words and your actions. This was kind of a way of letting them know that they need to be careful and loving and considerate about the way that they engage with other people. Listen to mommy and daddy the first time, right? So what happens is if they violate any of these things, they know that there could be consequences. And so we talk a lot about choices. Initially it was choices and consequences, but then I realized that's not right because it's choices and results, right? Some results are good, some results are bad, right? It's not just that every choice has a negative consequence. So if any of these things get violated, I don't have to tell them what the rules are. I can bring discipline. Discipline might be you miss out on using that toy right now. Discipline might be, okay, you're going to spend some time in timeout. Discipline might be you miss out on something that you want. It took me a while to figure out what Camden cared about. Colin, it was a lot easier, but with Camden, the key to his heart is food. So he misses out on sweets now, right? A sweet that he could have. He misses that opportunity to have a dessert candy, a sweet. Now that it's established, one really awesome thing about having this established is there was a time when Colin, he hit his brother with a toy, and it wasn't too painful, and so he just, you know, it wasn't malicious and all that, and so he started griping, but he got a timeout for it, and then he kept complaining, and so then the timeout extended, and then I went over to him, and I said, you know what, buddy, I'm going to get you out of timeout now, but your timeout's not done, so I'm going to sit in timeout for you. And he's like, why? And I said, because that's what Jesus did for me. He died on the cross so I didn't have to, just like you don't have to. And I remember the bewilderment where he just walks away, like it's like someone hit him in the head with a hammer, and he walks over to mom. He's like, Daddy's sitting in timeout for me, right? Trying to communicate that there are consequences for your choices, but sometimes I can take that hit for you. But it's not that there's not consequences. It's not that there's not results to bad choices. Now we're telling them, do to others as you would have them do to you, right? One of the greatest commandments. And so this is about being love initiators. It's not just, you know, staying in the back and, you know, letting other kids get picked on at school or something like that. If you were picked on, what would you want kids to do to you? How would you want them to engage with you? How do you want them to love you? Being a love initiator, just like God was with us. Being sacrificial love initiators. We've got to do that, teach that to our kids. And there could be discipline for choosing not to do that in our house. If you know the right thing to do and you choose not to do it, to him it's sin. So, as they learn more, as they know more, that's opportunity there. And again, this is all under the idea that I'm going to let loose a lot of control way before a lot of other parents do. Because I think what happens is a lot of parents are hands-off, and then when things start going bad, they get hands-on. And a lot of times that's too late. Under God's grace, he's always able to right any ship, but it can be hard. Never make a threat you're not willing to go through on. That doesn't make any sense, right? Why would you tell a kid something that you're not going to do? That's just confusing. It should be a discipline that you're willing to follow through with if they don't do it, because otherwise you're just making idle threats, and then that's no good. Learn your kids, know their patterns to prevent and manage escalation in advance. This is like, okay, they always... I can't remember if I put any bullets on here. Yeah, our challenge with food and water at bedtime. They never want to go to bed. There's always something else they want to do. They always need another, you know, now my tummy's hungry. Now I need some water. Now I need this. Now I want a toy. I need a different toy. I need my bunny. I need a different bunny. I need a blanket. It goes on and on and on and on and on, right? Crazy. So, well, we know this is going to happen now. What do we do in advance? How can we de-escalate that? And part of it is finding a good way for them to go to bed and letting them know, you got to be ready in advance. That's like your job, buddy, right? Like, whatever you want before you go in that room, that's cool. But the clock's ticking, so it's about time. So get it all together, get what you need, because what you don't get, you're probably going to miss out on tonight, but you can take it if you want it. And then I give them options, right? So if they come out, and it's, you know, they haven't been coming out a lot lately, and they just come out one night. It's like, okay, do you want to go back to the room by yourself, or would you like to hold my hand as we go back to the room? And that's going to look real different for older kids. But if you can give them options that are both good, that's pretty cool, because kids like choices. A lot of times we just see what they're not doing, and then we just want to do the right thing, right? But if you can give them choices that let them choose between two things that are good and fine, it's a great way to kind of come alongside them. We have to be direct without yelling, being mean, or insensitive, right? We can't get into that with discipline. That wouldn't be loving discipline. That's not the way that God would have us be with our kids. Never discipline in anger. If I get hot, I'm tapping Jenny in, right? If I realize that I'm getting upset, in that moment, I'm not really in a good place to give them loving discipline. And so I might just say, Daddy needs a minute. I'll grab Jenny. She'll take over. I'll take care of, you know, the other kid or two, whatever's going on. But we've got to be real careful with that. But you know what? You're going to mess up. I mess up. So when you wrong them, tell them. Tell them you wronged them. Tell them you made a bad choice. But don't give up. Don't give up on discipline just because you made a wrong, just because you made a mistake. Yep, we talked about that. I'm going to skip. Well, I'll go through this fast. Read with your kids. To them, with them, share the Bible. Camden didn't like to read the Bible. He hated it. And that bothered me a lot, and I didn't know why he was doing that, why he was feeling that. And as I prayed about it, I got insight. And the reason was because the Bible to him was the end of fun. Bible happened before bed, so Bible was the trigger that fun was over. And he loves fun, which is awesome, right? So I needed to change that. So now the Bible happens, and then we have a little bit more fun after the Bible, and then we go to bed. And he was totally cool with that, right? So just trying to figure out, you know, I mean, it's not that he hated the Bible necessarily. I mean, I thought maybe he did or whatever, but that simple change helped a lot. Teach them anything that they're into. Bugs, history of Spider-Man, whatever question comes up. I mean, they want to learn, you know, be engaged in their learning. It's fun. Take time to talk, communicate, explain things well. And don't let yourself be too hurried. We talked about that. But it's hard, right? So when you feel yourself hurried, ask God for insight why it is. A little repeat. Okay. Talk about money, savings, and the traps of advertising. So our kids watch lots of cartoons. They want to buy everything they see on TV. They see toys in the store. They see all kinds of different stuff. And we talk about how, what are they trying to do here, Colin? Are they just showing you something that's fun and cool? No. They want your money. They want our money. Why do they want our money? So they can keep it. So they can do what they want to do with it. Can we help more or less people if we give that money away? Less. Do we want to buy that thing? No. Why not? Because we want to help the people with the hurdy. That's the way we talk about it, 6-year-old. So we talk about that. We talk about how, you know, advertising wants to take your money and make it their money. And everything that we see that sounds fun and cool might not be that enjoyable. And also, if you buy everything that you want, you don't have any money left to help people who need things. So we talk about that. We talk about savings, and we talk a little bit about how we spend our money. Be principle-based, not just telling them what to do. And share your failures with them.